In this episode of Tuning Healthcare, I'm joined by Brian Lobley. Brian is the Executive Vice President of Health Markets at Independence Health Group, the parent company of Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia. He's also the founding chair of Quill, a newly formed joint venture between Independence and Comcast. In this episode of Tuning Healthcare, Brian and I discuss how IBC is dealing with COVID and taking care of their members during this difficult time. We get his perspective as a Blue on value-based care and how the Blues must collaborate with providers to drive superior healthcare outcomes in their local communities. We also discuss how payers need to innovate and Brian's view of Quill as the avenue by which IBC is doing that. Join Brian and I as we tune healthcare. Brian, thanks for joining me today. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on. We'll get into this, but have a unique role in helping Lumaris really get off the ground. And so we appreciate that and truly appreciate you taking the time. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nigel. Looking forward to it.
So how are you? How's the family? Tough times, as we all know.
Yeah, hanging in there. I'm still home, believe it or not. So no, everyone's doing really well. I was thinking about, that's like the most common question when you haven't spoken to someone in a while. So I was reflecting on it prior to us hopping on this podcast. And I thought, you know, there's been tough times, there's been frustrating times, but I've had more meals with my family since the middle of March on the evenings than I could have ever imagined during, you know, this time period, you know, the spring into the summer, given all the commitments that, you know, we all have externally. So I'm trying to look on the positives versus just weighing down on the negatives. And, you know, everyone's healthy and everyone's happy. And we got our next milestone, at least on the personal side, which is the schools coming up. So we're just kind of anxiously waiting and anticipating what's going to happen there. But we're doing great. How about you? Everyone doing well?
We're doing well. I think similar to you, we're fortunate to have a number of silver linings, right? One of them is the ability for me to sleep in my own bed every night and see the family as regularly as we do. And so there's been, I think my wife and I appreciate it more than perhaps the kids do, but enormous amount of family time that I think we will look back on with an element of enjoyment, even though what's obviously going on around us and what went on around us in New York is incredibly difficult.
Yep.
What about Independence? How's it going?
You know, we're doing well, I think, despite everything. We're trying to make sure from a business standpoint that we're obviously managing all of the risks that comes with this pandemic. So there are some unanticipated risks, like making sure all of our group and member customers understand their benefits, understand, you know, what happens if they've gotten sick. We've taken a lead in the Philadelphia market with a Beat COVID campaign. We've brought other employer groups and business partners together with that. But Dan, who I know you know well, our CEO, so Dan Hilfrey has been front and center, kind of messaging. We ran one of my favorite ones is Behind the Mask. So we took a bunch of kind of pictures of people with their masks on and posted it all over social. And, 3 days later, 4 days later, removed the masks, and it had everyone from Gritty, our, you know, iconic Flyers mascot, all the way to Dan and other folks. So just, you know, trying to reinforce the messages that there's things that we all need to be doing just as citizens. So from a corporate standpoint, we've tried to make sure we're, as all the Blues are, really taking account of our role as corporate citizens and corporate leaders. So we have a community-focused role there. And then from a business standpoint, it's been interesting. Obviously, we're on the payer side. So if you take a look at everything you're reading or just thinking about people not going to elective surgeries, et cetera, so we're trying to make sure we understand that there's some aspects of that that we need to take into account when we look at how the business is performing. And we've accelerated some rebates out to group customers. We've offered payment flexible terms. We've accepted credit card payments into group payments for the first time. We've offered this upcoming month in September, we have premium discounts going out across the board. So we're really trying to weigh everything. And then, you know, working with those group customers to understand what they're doing relative to furloughs and extending underwriting guidelines and things like that. So, you know, it's real proud of the effort that we've put in to make sure that our customers and our members, you know, understand what they have and understand what additional benefits or offerings we can do. And then, you know, the hardest thing is really managing kind of the operations of the world, right? So we essentially closed our offices on Friday, March 13th. We have had a limited essential personnel in there, less than 100 people a day. Great people that are going in and, you know, processing payments and mailroom and facilities and security and things like that. But the vast majority of the associates have been at home. So, you know, call center people having to relocate from a work environment to take calls at home, and they've done a great job. So we were ready. We did some early planning the end of February, early March, as we thought, hey, this could really happen, to make sure we're ready and available for this from a system standpoint. And since then, we're just, you know, fine tuning it, you know, upping our game from Skype to Teams. So everything's become a little bit more easier from a video standpoint, and making sure all the different platforms, Zoom and WebEx and everything, support it. So it's been, you know, it's been a challenge, but I think I look back and think of the opportunity that I presented us from a company. I'm really proud of the way we responded, and I hope our customers and our members are too.
Yeah, that's great. Some of our clients actually have noticed that in jobs like a call center, there's been a higher turnover than historically. Have you noticed that with some of those jobs, or have you managed to?
No, actually, yeah, we're at our lowest turnover levels that we've seen in some time. So, you know, I'd be remiss not to say, with the fall coming up, and again, we talk about the school schedules and shift work and things like that, you know, we could see some impact there on staffing levels and turnovers. But really, through right here, August 20th, our turnover levels are probably at the lowest they've been in a number of years. We're happy and fortunate that, because it allows our experienced people to stay engaged with customers. And that's really across operations, not just call center. I think claims processing and groups like that who, you know, it's hard to be in an office at home, and, you know, maybe it's a spare bedroom, maybe it's the dining room, maybe it's a basement. And your job is, you know, making sure you're kind of productive, right? And making sure you're hitting those productivity measures without having the in-person scrum meetings or having the coffee break where you can talk to a colleague. We've been holding steady though, so it's been great.
That's great. And what about plans? I think I remember reading when your building was purchased that it was the most expensive building in per square foot in Center City. I don't know if it's still the case. And so the plan just to wear this out and come back into the building, or do you think there'll be some long-term changes as to how,
you know,
independents operate?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, prior to COVID, we made the decision to actually purchase our building. We owned it all the way through the late 80s, sold it in the 90s. There was an opportunity to make a purchase back. I'll tell you that I think from a single site building, and we've seen this on the real estate analysis, actually, those values are holding steady, if not increasing. It's multi-tenant buildings where you're seeing a property value hit. So just think about a return to work scenario, whether that's this fall or after the new year, because we are measuring this almost in 30 to 45 day increments. We want to give our associates enough planning time, childcare issue, you know, elder care, dealing with parents, et cetera. So we're not going to rush anyone back in, and we're going to have safety and security at the forefront of everything we do. But let's fast forward and say after the new year, you know, we begin to return to work, the footprint's going to change, right? So the days, I think, of cubicles where it was the open floor plan and you could kind of talk to someone right across, I think that's going to have to change, you know, regardless of the pandemic ending or COVID vaccines, et cetera. So for us, it kind of reinforced our position. So now we have the footprint, the floor plan. If we have, you know, 5,000 people in the building today, even if we have 4,000 tomorrow, because 1,000 jobs go virtual, we're still going to need that full footprint. So I don't think it really, if anything, it kind of enhances our plan and gives us a little bit more control over what we want to do. So, it's a great question. And I think, you know, I was explaining to someone the other day, you know, if you kind of take the analogy of a baseball game, I mean, we haven't reached the seventh or eighth inning yet, right? We're still probably in the second or third, maybe the fourth inning. Certainly you and I are fortunate, right, living in the Northeast Corridor. So we've had, you know, a more compliant population, it seems like, and maybe we've already weathered our storms. Hopefully, I certainly am praying that New York has, and I think Philadelphia already dealt with, you know, a couple mini peaks. So now we'll just wait to see when it's safe for all of us to resume, you know, some sort of normalcy.
Yeah, no. And so switching to the to healthcare, obviously, which is the business that we're all in. How does the pandemic change the strategy for IBC? What changes as a result of this?
How much time you got, Nigel? We could. Yeah, that's a
whole day, right?
Well, here's the most interesting part for independents. So we had started our strategy at the end of last year. So we were embarking on what we were thinking about was a five-year strategy. It's a pretty big pre-pandemic inflection point in healthcare, right? Think about everything from value-based care being a major thrust to digital tools, consumerism, crazy valuations of startups, et cetera, right? So we were in the midst of, you know, planning kind of independence's place in that environment. Well, then COVID hits, right? So we pause. You know, think back to those March timeframes. I don't think many of us, and I'll be the first one to say it, I didn't think in mid-August, end of August, we'd be in this basically the same exact environment. I thought it would be a little bit different. So we paused appropriately. And then as the pandemic began to worsen and kind of understanding of some certain seismic shifts that just happened, think virtual care as one of them, telehealth, I think we're seeing a sustained 23x increase in telehealth services. We don't turn back the dial on that. So when we restarted strategy a couple months ago, it was in this new paradigm, right? So we had, and we're not complete yet, but we're looking at it and saying, you know, what's steady, right? What's not going back? Virtual care. I think you and I can agree that that environment, you know, finally has accelerated in healthcare. We think financial services, retail, all these other industries are 5, 7, 10 years ahead of healthcare pre-pandemic. Well, we've been forced to play catch up. I think as an industry, we've done a really good job. I think as a market, independence has done a phenomenal job. And we made some interesting bets before that with Quill, for instance, our joint venture with Comcast, that's very much in the digital health space. So if I think about that environment, you know, we feel like we're positioned. And if anything, we're going to put more chips into that side of the table and really figure out how we can be an enabler of digital health, virtual healthcare assets. So you take that kind of piece over there. And then if you look at the kind of traditional business that we are, which is insuring members, insuring groups, that's the one where there's a lot of questions. So you have a political environment coming up that could have massive consequences on, you know, the Affordable Care Act business, insured business in general for group customers, Medicare Advantage expansion, Medicaid. We have a large managed Medicaid business, as you know. So I think our greatest asset is our ability to diversify, which we've done as a health plan. I think we're one of the most diversified Blues plans out there with all the different assets we have. And then our ability to partner. I think, you know, when Dan became CEO 10 years ago, I think by now, he really brought a partnership ethos to us that has kind of held fort. So Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is our partner in the AmeriHealth Caritas managed Medicaid business. I mentioned Comcast. We have an asset, Tandem, that you're very familiar with that started as a partnership with DaVita. Now we own fully, but we've shown that ability to I think do unique things in the marketplace. And I think that's where healthcare is going. I think that's the seismic shift that's going to sit right there with virtual care, is that plans, payers, providers, payviders, things like that. I think it's going to look at abilities for us to work in non-traditional ways across each other. So we've restarted it. I think if you look at the asset base, we feel really great at where we're starting from. But we're also going to take some bold moves and you know, think about behavioral health. If there's anything I think that we're concerned about from a plan perspective, and talking to providers, we know they're concerned as well, as you know, the consequences of a pandemic, the consequences of loneliness, the consequences of, you know, a fear factor of going outside. It's going to play its hands into not necessarily diabetes and heart disease and things like that. It could be behavioral issues. So we have a real focus right now to figure out what an integrated behavioral health strategy can be. How can we partner with the provider community in the Philadelphia market, but nationally as well, as we think of our national account customers? So that's really been something that we were kind of tugging at pre-COVID. And now, instead of tugging at it, you know, we put everybody, every executive put a hand on the rope, right? And we're tugging in the same direction now on that one.
Yeah, it's a massive, massive space, and it's incredibly important. Let's come back to that. What I'd love to chat a little bit about Quill.
Sure.
I think you were a founding member, right? You're yep. the chair of the board. Tell us a little bit about Quill. What is the strategy, and what's success look like if you roll the clock forward for Quill?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity. That's my favorite thing to talk about besides independence right now. So, you know, Quill was a joint venture we started with Comcast in 2016. And when I say we started, you know, you think back 4 years ago, that was the early stages of figuring out what we were going to do with Comcast, what was a unique partnership with our largest customer, of which Comcast is. We started a process with them where we actually were going to do a joint venture fund. And in the midst of 2016, as we were having a lot of planning meetings and figuring out, you know, a capital contribution model, we're in a conference room back when we were allowed to be together. And we had this giant whiteboard. And we had all these independence assets on one side and all the Comcast NBC Universal assets on the other side. Not ashamed to say their whiteboard was bigger than ours, Nigel. So we looked at this and said, okay, you know, there's all these digital health, you know, how about we, you know, invest or take positions in a few companies and, you know, really scale along the membership base and use assets like content production that NBC has and ability to reach the home that Xfinity has and experiential design, think of theme parks. And what really happened is we came up with a thesis statement that really kind of has underpinned Quill from its beginning, is that anybody in a healthcare journey, whether it's for yourself personally, it's for a child in a caregiver role, it's for a parent, it's for a friend that's calling you, every single time that you're in that healthcare journey, you're going to have one fundamental question that's going to override everything else, is what do I do next? I'm at a point in my journey, what do I do next? So that became kind of a rallying cry, and we said, wait a minute, instead of taking our assets, right, financial, human capital, IP, et cetera, pushing it into a startup, why don't we create our own? So by the end of 16, we started creating a kind of a loose business plan, you know, took a little bit into 18, as you can imagine, two really big companies trying to settle on a joint venture. And I say to my friends at Comcast all the time, we've become not only great partners, great friends, is, you know, it's unique to do a JV with Comcast. They typically don't do that, right? They're typically you know, an owner of an entity. Think NBC way back, think Sky, think all these other acquisitions. So it was a unique kind of process feeling our way through. So once we reached the, this is what we're going to do, we started building a technology base. We did a CEO search, and we hired a wonderful CEO, Karina Edwards, who's been in now, I think, a little over a year. And we started on this model where we are going to be prescribed essentially through the provider. So we've signed contracts with Rothman. We have a contract with Penn Medicine, Move, and some others that are near finished. And we've really digitized the healthcare journey for those providers. And we started with orthopedics so we could prove there's a stage gate process, right? There's a diagnosis, there's pre-op, op, post-op, therapy, new normal. And you can be, you know, kind of guided through that journey, and it helps lower admission costs, readmission costs, pardon me. It has, you know, adherence kind of built into it. So it's really allowing that consumer to get that prescription from the provider to navigate. And the beauty of the partnership is we can be on any piece of glass in your house, iPhone, iPad, TV. Pre-pandemic, we're down that path. Pandemic hits, and it's, wow, I mean, we're, you know, what do? We're paused, right? Well, great thing about this startup is it's well-funded because the two parents are, you know, kind of all in on the digital health mission here. So Karina and her team pivoted quickly. They built a COVID journey, and an aha light went off where we figured that actually the back-end technology is ready built. We can stand up journeys really, really quick. So now Penn Medicine has come to us and said, okay, we're going big. Let's go big. So we're going to put independents and Comcast members in and really go department by department with Penn and try to work to, you know, as best as possible, digitize those journeys and bring the power of payer information, the power of provider information, and the technology from Xfinity to power this. And at the same time, Marhealth Caritas came to us and said, we have these caregivers, right? In the LTSS population, I have, one person as the key central point for taking care of others. So we signed to Marhealth Caritas, and we're rolling out a caregiver journey with them for all the Pennsylvania managed Medicaid LTSS patients. I mean, that's going to be super powerful to have that kind of at your fingertips. And we've become fortunate in some ways, during COVID, as we're at home and realizing that our entertainment's connected. I mean, we haven't missed a beat shopping, right? I mean, there's probably Amazon packages I have to get from the front door today, right? So we're that rest of that world was digitized. Health is, there's still a gap, right? Telehealth's happening, but not necessarily all that kind of access to information. So, Quill's that the mortar between the bricks, right? And we're continuing to build. So we're bullish about the opportunity. We want to kind of make Philadelphia the demonstration market. And we have these great things coming from caregiver, neat kind of care delivery journey. And the kind of third part of the business that we're exploring right now is also the sensor business. So if you think about passive monitoring and things you can activate through the home, that's kind of the third frontier. We're kind of just early in the exploration phase there, but another kind of homage to COVID, right? Because you're realizing you're home and, wow, wouldn't it be nice if, had an alert pop through at, 9 a.m. if the refrigerator didn't open at mom's house yet, right? So the ability to put passive monitors as well into the home is something we're exploring now. So big plans for it, anchor part of kind of Independence's strategy, great team. And they were very fortunate because the team hasn't missed a beat. So, could talk about that all day.
That's great. And so talk a little bit about the Philadelphia market. As I mentioned at the beginning, owe an element of a debt of gratitude, right, to Independence because to you in particular, because Lumeris's first foray out of our we'd done some work in Florida, but our first sort of serious foray out of our home market was into Philadelphia, and as I say, Independence sponsored us, and so we owe you a debt of gratitude as we started the Lumeris journey. A market that we know well. But tell us how's the market going to evolve? What is the relationship now between the different health systems, the independent practices like Tandem, which obviously you mentioned before. Yep. You're obviously the 800-pound gorilla in the market. How does the market evolve? And in particular, given Lumeris's look at the world and purview, what do you think that fee-for-service is gonna move away quicker, or do you think that the systems will still look to hang on to that model for longer?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think if I think about the market first and your question specifically relative to that, I think, I maybe one of the positives of COVID, and I don't want to downplay, the negatives that are there and the impact that it's had to people and families and careers and the like, it's been tragic, right? But a positive that has come out of it is it's forced in market conversation, I'll say. And I believe that conversation has led to tremendous opportunity and collaboration. So for us, it's our hometown market, right? So we have the Blue brand in the five counties around Philadelphia. So we look at our customer base as really being anchored there, from the Comcast of the world to the Urban Outfitters of the world and companies like that are national accounts, all the way down to all the labor funds that we serve to individual consumers and MA. We kind of play across the board. So we have an ability, I think, to have the right conversations with the IDSs around what's best for our members. And I say our meaning ours and those physicians. And you mentioned Tandem and his ability from an independent physician standpoint to keep them independent. We believe in the independent physician marketplace. So that the market has a lot of diversity. So it has Penn Medicine, it has Jefferson, Mainline, Temple, to name a few that are in the city. But again, COVID forced us all to work together to manage the crisis. So Dan, I think in his leadership role, had stepped up and was able to kind of engage dialogue at the CEO level across the health systems. and really forge a partnership in tackling what COVID was potentially going to bring. Collectively, the hospital systems kind of united together to have Temple's Leocora Center be available as a triage hospital. And Tony Coletta, who I know you know, stepped up as the chief medical officer out of his role at Tandem. And we helped put together a CEO and a COO. And we didn't need a lot of the beds, thankfully. But that type of dialogue, you know, is, I think, kind of a Philly theme, right? We always call ourselves the biggest small town in America, right? Because you've been to the city. It's a close-knit city. I grew up here. I could walk from my office to City Hall and I'll bump into someone from grade school or high school or something like that. So we have this collegial kind of partnership, birthplace, if I will go back to history here, right? It's the birthplace of America. So we have, I think, an ability to fall back on that. So I think what is emerging is a recognition across all stakeholders that the fee-for-service marketplace needs massive, massive transformation. Customers are demanding it. Providers are looking forward to it on how they earn incentives and help drive, adherence and quality and cost down. And payers as the intermediary need it, right? We need to be able to get to equations where we're able to do, partial or full risk deals. We've signed a few. Tandem is full risk. We have ChenMed in through the dedicated senior centers. They're in market with us, and we have elements of value-based contracts with the IDSs in place. So I think really the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a pretty big shift. I don't know that I am confident enough right now to say that the market will be full upside downside risk in 5 years. And I don't think that's going to happen in the Northeast. If you look at the DC to Washington to Philly to New York to Boston bubble, I think we would both agree that's not going to happen. That's not going to change over the next 5 years, but over the next decade, absolutely. So I think it's a step function. I think our role then is to be flexible in the way that journey has to happen. I don't think it's going to be the same at each IDS. I don't think it's going to be the same for each clinician. I don't think it's going to be the same for each specialist or urgent care and virtual care provider that comes into the market. So what we're focused on is looking at each of those contracts and those relationships, quite frankly, independently, as opposed to saying, here's what the left is doing, let's get this on the right. That's not what we're looking at. We're like, here's where you're at today. Here's the patients that are carrying this blue card, whether it be independents or our blue brethren that have members that live in the Philadelphia area that come in and get services at Penn and Jeff and Mainline and Temple and others. And we're approaching that and saying, here's the volume of patients that we collectively want to have the best quality and the lowest cost so that they're continuing coming into your facility, to your doc, et cetera. So I think that has been the role that, we have taken with them, and it's been transparent. It's not been kind of a forced hand. I think it's been dialogue and partnership oriented. So each of those relationships have evolved into different conversations, around even different patient populations. One of those providers may be a larger MA player, which, has more risk components because of stars and everything else that you maybe can look at differently than the ACA marketplace, that there is a net sum revenue game, right, for payers. It's not a net increase. So, but I think the market is going to continue to be a multi-provider market, and our ability to navigate that and partner effectively with each of those institutions, because as you know, our geography is set up in such a way that there's also not a lot of overlap in service area between those hospitals, for instance. So they're a kind of a geographic kind of entity in some regards. So, I think we're able to effectively manage that. But, that's to kind of put the, little note in the bottle, right? Toss it on the Jersey Shore and kind of pick it back up in 10 years and see if we were right. But I think it's going to be a partnership-driven market that's going to be, a lot more risk-bearing and fee-for-value than fee-for-service in 3 to 5 years.
Right. Interesting. And definitely something that we're seeing from the health system side, across the country, a really a desire to move faster You know, they most of them had a strategy anyway to move out of FIFA service, and the pandemic has illustrated to many that safety in FIFA service is clearly not there, and they've sped up.
Nigel, so, that other point there, that I make, that I think there's still an education that's happening around the provider community on the self-funded business. So 65% of our commercial business is self-funded, right? So we need to enable value-based programs with those providers into those self-funded customers, especially if they're national, right? So their Comcast does not have all its members in here in Philadelphia. They have a portion of them. So there's been an education as well, because as you move away from fee-for-service, or as customers ask for, you know, a different value equation, you know, we have to go back and educate providers that saying, you know, at every 100 independence patients you see, 65 of them, you know, we're not the fiduciary, right? We're enabling care and access to them, and we're enabling services. So there's still, that education is not complete yet either.
Right. I've always thought the name payer is an odd term, right? Because, right, the payers are in the colloquial term of a payer, right? Are the government, employers, and individuals, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things that, again, I'm not talking independence specifically here, I'm talking more nationally, that has frustrated me over the last few years is that I've watched a number of payers really sort of block the move to value and do often the exact opposite of what you just said, which is treat each system, each physician differently and realize their own unique needs and often like put out a contract and say this is the contract, everyone in the state has to sign it and this is it, right? And so using the power of and weight of the market leader to do that. So do you think something will have changed in sort of payers nationally that will, if we were to pick up your bottle of the Jersey Shore in 10 years, that will change that? What do you think will change? Because over the last 3 to 5 years, I'll be honest, I've been frustrated at payers not willing to partner more quickly.
I couldn't agree more with what you just said. I've been frustrated too. I think it's very different when you're a national contracting entity than when you are a local contracting entity. So I absolutely believe that the Blues will drive fee-for-value transformation more so than any other payer. And they have to. That to me is mission imperative, brand imperative, to our ability to localize. Healthcare is local, right? So you have to localize markets. You get healthcare where you live and where you work, right? So when you're activating a market or where you're incentivizing a market, which we would be in this Philadelphia 5 County, well, we uniquely understand, the needs of those geography situations that I just mentioned. And we're able to look at the cohort of patients and say that the differential, patient experience and even patient demographics that come in require differential contracting. So we have value-based care steering committees that are different with each health institution and entity. So again, I'll speak very, very blue here, right? It is the uniqueness of the Blues and the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association to be able to work collaboratively in that marketplace. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, everyone does, because I'm sure they don't, right? And I run into situations where I'm trying to enable, a national account member in another market for something unique. But, we started high-performing networks for the Blues, and we knit it together out of the 36 Blues plans, all of our unique high-performance networks to put together a national network plan. So I think that, a fundamental intrinsic question for payers holistically are, if you're going to be cookie cutter, what incremental value are you providing for a customer? What incremental value are you providing? Think of the MA space, right? Which is government reimbursed largely. Like, how can you get into a differential value-based relationship if you have a cookie cutter approach? And, a senior who lives in one of our suburban counties is very different than a senior who lives kind of an inner city, just, I mean, transportation needs alone are different. So you got to get very unique in those contract structures. So I'm with you. I get frustrated as well when, you know, the nomenclature has always been fee for value. And then, you know, some of the templates are, well, this is the template to fill out to get there. Well, no, that's, you know, we're not going to have the same experience also in Philadelphia that we're going to have in North Jersey, where we do business under our AmeriHealth brand, right? Where that's a very different market for us to contract in. It's a very different market for us to put products and services in. And by the way, we're in the ACA business in New Jersey and Philadelphia 5 County. AmeriHealth New Jersey brand, Independence Blue Cross brand. Our approach to those markets are vastly different, vastly, vastly different. That's from a product standpoint, but that's also from a provider standpoint. So, you know, we've seen it firsthand that cookie cutter doesn't work. There can be a framework on value, how much risk can you share and things like that, but there can't be the specifics below it. So if you and I are having this conversation even 3 years from now, and you have to ask the same question, which I hope you don't, but if you have to, that's going to mean that we've had a lack in or a stalling of progress, because it just should not happen.
Yeah, and we're also big believers in forming these collaborations and helping to form these collaborations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which obviously are our clients and the payers. And I agree with you. And going back to conversations we've had, you know, almost a decade ago, right? We did a great business trip out to the West Coast.
Yep.
Once upon a time, and the Blues are uniquely positioned as local entities. Their sort of tentacles into the community are deep. As you say, you live there, you grew up there. It's a very different relationship to some of the nationals that can come and go from markets with greater ease. You can't, you know, maybe you could come out of New Jersey, but you definitely can't come out of the 5 counties.
No.
Right. Yep. That's home. And so I think the Blues have an enormous opportunity, and we're doing things like that with not too far from you with Hackensack in Northern New Jersey. I think that's a real pathway. What would you like to see more from health systems? What would you like to see health systems do? What frustrates you that they're doing that you'd like to see them do better, differently?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds a little bit of a cop-out, but I think it is the experience side, right? I mean, I think we all think about opportunities that, you know, we've had in care situations, and it's been confusing, complex, and, you know, sometimes probably misunderstood, right? I always say to folks, I have the utmost advantage being in this industry to understand, you know, how to navigate the experience of healthcare. So I think that is something where I believe that it pays dividends on the bottom line, that if we improve the patient experience, improve information sharing, improve access to information, that it's going to improve the bottom lines for providers and payers and customers, for that matter, and individual consumers. I think, to me, I think about the brands we all love, right? The brand you turn back to, whether it's, you know, again, we kind of joked on Amazon, you know, with the packages, but things like that where there's a repeatability to it, because you're not frustrated, right? I think that's the, if I had the kind of wand and I could wave, I would say, let's make sure that when someone's in a care continuum, that the experience is seamless, that it's, you know, pleasant to an extent, which obviously, you know, it necessarily can't be pleasant if you're, you know, in an acute situation, but it can be pleasant for the family. It can be pleasant for, you know, for the caregivers. So, you know, that to me is probably, you know, as I think about kind of the digital world that we live in, and, you know, how we consume entertainment, and again, retail, or even, you know, again, I go back to financial services. You can get a check today in the mail. You can take a picture and the funds are available later that day. I mean, that's, who would have thought that 10 years ago, but it happens. So think about from a care aspect, you know, is it really that hard for me to understand that, you know, I have to show up at this hour and this is what I have. And oh, by the way, I didn't have to take notes during it. And I come home and I, you know, open an app and it says, all right, this is exactly what I have to do. This is my treatment plan. Look, there's going to be issues with us as consumers, just consumer behavior adhering to it. But I think too often the experience is fragmented, frustrated, and unclear. And by the way, we have a role in that too, right? One of the biggest issues out there is still understanding your financial obligation. So co-pays, deductibles, co-insurance. I mean, how many people know what co-insurance is? You know, none. I can tell you back when the ACA launched, we did surveys. You know, and it's the one thing that's also expressed in the opposite, right? It, you know, everything else is expressed in member liability. Co-insurance is expressed in provider liability. People don't understand that. So we have to simplify, you know, I think the transaction of healthcare. And I think that to me, if I, you know, would ask on the provider side, and again, I, you know, not as a cop-out commercial for Quill, right? But kind of that's why we said that's the business to focus on, right? I think That's what I would say is number one for me. The second one, which I think we're hitting on a little bit in this kind of fee for value piece, you know, is just aligned incentives, right? So the idea of, you know, the transformation of care out of a patient room into an alternative care site or into your home, I think is here, right? So I think a willingness to partner and accelerate that, and we have to come to the table as much as the providers on this one, but I think that would be, I don't know if it's a 1B or a number two, but it's up there as a second thing.
Right. You know, the whole area of consumer engagement is one that I know is dear to your heart and something you spend a lot of time on, and one we don't really have time to get into in much depth. But I don't think we ever really feel like a consumer in any part of the healthcare.
Correct. Industry.
And I mean, you know, if you and I were to walk into a hotel, right, the way we're treated, the way they talk to us, the interaction we have is completely different to the interaction we have in the healthcare system. And Rick and I actually were did a podcast in a studio in Midtown Manhattan, and at the end of the podcast, normally when we've done them in studios, no one really listens. And the woman came out at the end, almost in tears, saying, you know, like, I really hope you are successful.
That's great.
In healthcare. Like, I'll give you, I mean, you mentioned co-insurance. She didn't even realize that deductible resets 1/1.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. And so suddenly she found herself in a massive financial situation to afford her care. She had a number of chronic conditions that she shared with us, and you know, it's you know, you sometimes lose the fact that this is real people that we're impacting, and it's so important the work that you do and the work that others do, and you know, we've got to be successful.
Yeah, it's not a we sometimes look at it as a transactional business, and it's not, right? And it's an emotional experience business. You know, and the stakeholders, I think, have to come together. I think your point around the hotel is so spot on. And even the fact of, like, you get the thank you, right? You get the checkout is thanking you for your business, right? So I think, yeah, we have a ways to go. I mean, consumerism, this is my 20th year at Independence. And I think, you know, in healthcare, there's consumerism this is the year of the consumer. Well, you know, it is right now because we fielded more phone calls for people and layoffs and trying to understand, you know, someone who's gotten insurance from their employer for 30, 40 plus years, don't understand what to do next, or people that are retiring early, given the pandemic, it's, wait a minute, I got to now think about insurance. So yeah, I think it's a necessity. I just hope that it's not one entity or one stakeholder solving it. I hope it's the industry thrust that really unites us all.
Yeah. So we like to end with what we call the quick fire round.
All right.
Couple of quick questions, easy ones. We'd love to get your perspective. Best piece of business advice you've ever received?
Hire people smarter than you.
That's a good one. What'd you do for fun when you want to take your mind off?
Play golf.
And yeah. Then finally, if you could change one thing right now about healthcare, what would it be?
Ooh, that's not a quick fire question. If I could change one thing about healthcare right now, paperless. So that's monetary paper, everything. I would like it to be, you know, fully digitized. Click right. Button. Yeah. One click.
Excellent. Great way to end. Brian, I really appreciate you taking the time. As ever, always incredibly insightful. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Nigel. Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Thank you for joining us today. Please follow us on your favorite streamer and don't forget to rate us, as it helps others find this podcast. As we move to tackling the next phase of this pandemic, we're going to continue to bring you leaders throughout healthcare that are at the cutting edge of what to do next. Please join us next time as we tune healthcare. This is Nigel Orenstein in New York.